on 98 FM and online. This is Phoenix FM.
God, I can't believe it.
What we've got here is failure to communicate.
Welcome to another edition of
Happiness to be found even in the darkest of times.
That system probably contains a new data encryption algorithm. You'll never get in there.
Welcome to the Happiness Algorithm with me, James Rose, the show that talks all things mental health, emotional well-being, and what we can do to make us that little bit happier. My guest today has spent more than 10 years in teaching and education. She's seen firsthand the struggles, pressures, and demands that both teachers and children face. She's seen how quickly and easily children can become disengaged when faced with a challenging task, how they feel they can't do something simply because it's more difficult to achieve. Sadly, she's observed how anxious and overwhelmed children have become when faced with the ever-increasing demands from the curriculum and from society as a whole. The feelings that arise from the pressure to conform, to do what everyone else is doing, and the overriding desire to fit in. My guests witnessed children giving up too quickly, beating themselves up because they made a mistake and got things wrong, their confidence diminishing because they did not get the correct score or they're not part of the in crowd. My guest says that because of these pressures, children have lost trust in themselves. They're unwilling to have a go. And as one child said to her, "My worries make me feel as if I'm a tortoise stuck in a shell." This sadness spurred my guest on to develop Power Thoughts, an organization specifically designed to help children arrest their negativity and anxiety when it comes to learning. Power Thoughts is a teaching, coaching, and mindfulness-based service which is aimed at empowering children to tap into the power of their minds. Sessions teach them how to become confident, resilient, and robust, developing a can-do attitude that allows them to flourish both in and out of the classroom setting. I am absolutely over the moon and delighted to introduce to the show Natalie Costa. Natalie, how are you?
Hello. Well, very well, and you? Thank you. Delighted to be here. Thank you.
I'm very, very pleased to have you on. Obviously, I've known of Power Thoughts for a while now and the work that you're doing. But for the listeners, tell us a little bit about Power Thoughts and a lot about you.
Yeah, sure. So yes, Power Thoughts is a coaching service I designed to help children tap into the power of their own thoughts, to help them recognize, that they don't have to believe every thought they think or respond to everything that they feel, and ultimately giving them the tools to help them manage their mindset so that they are feeling calmer, happier, and more confident within themselves. And really, the tools that I wish I had as a child, I think, and I still apply many of these tools that I teach today.
And I think we can all relate to that, absolutely.
Yeah, totally, totally. So, and I think, like you said, in your intro, and I was smiling here, I was like, wow, he's done a brilliant job. I've written down some ways of how you've described it because it's really helped me. it did start back when I was in the classroom. And I think I trained to be a teacher. I was trained in South Africa, and then I came over to the UK to teach. And my intention was always to go back to South Africa and to do my master's in educational psychology, because I also had a psychology degree. But I ended up staying here because I enjoyed life. I enjoyed living here. But I knew that there was something else that I wanted to be doing, but I didn't quite know what that was. I mean, a long story short, but, you know, Power Thoughts ultimately was born because I realized how stressed and worried and anxious some of the children were, particularly the year sixes that I was working with at that year. And, you know, I recognized, you know, at that point on the curriculum, we, you know, we teach children how to think and how to problem solve, but nowhere did we actually teach them about their thoughts and what their thoughts are, and that you don't have to believe every thought that you think. And that really is kind of like the starting point of that led me on to do what I do today.
So Natalie, did you notice in the early part of your training, in your career, a difference between the children in South Africa and those in the UK in terms of their emotional well-being? Or is it sort of global, the thinking aspect?
I think, good question. I don't think I was switched on to think of it like that when I was still training back in the UK. In South Africa, I never ended up teaching there. So I did my 4-year teaching degree. My 5th year, I did my honours in psychology. And then I came to the UK. So initially, I don't think that was even made. I didn't think of it like that because I had my plan to be here for 2 years and then go back and do educational psychology. But I think as I started to search for different things that I wanted to do and I started to explore different avenues, and at that point, coaching had started to become a bit of a buzzword, the word life coaching. And I was quite intrigued by it, but also I was thinking, well, what is this life coaching thing? It sounds a bit gimmicky. But actually, a school I was with sent me on a coaching course and it was a taster to life coaching. And that's really when it opened up my mind in terms of what coaching actually entailed. And it was then that I started to, I guess, first of all, explore how I could use coaching in my life. And initially, actually, I wanted to leave education altogether. So a lot of people were telling me around me and at school, you should bring your coaching tools into the classroom. But I was completely resistant against that. I was, you know, at that point, very fixed in terms of thinking, well, I can't bring this to children. I could perhaps coach parents, but ideally, I want to try help coach women who are making career changes like I was myself. So that was sort of the avenue I was exploring. And it was only after about a couple of years that I obviously was still working full time, coaching clients in the evening, that I had come off a stress management CPD day that I absolutely loved. And the next day I was working with these year sixes that were so stressed for their exams. And that's when I guess my mindset opened and I was like, well, why don't I teach them some of the tools that I've just discovered this weekend? And I still remember thinking, are they going to be able to understand what I talk about? You know, this is so different to what they're open to or what they're used to receiving. But they clearly did. And the feedback I got from parents was I need to carry on doing this. So actually, I think before in South Africa, I wasn't even aware. I wasn't open to it. I didn't, like, almost like a horse with blinkers. I just wasn't even, it wasn't even on my focus, if that makes any sense.
Yeah, very much so. What was the, I suppose I'm interested. It makes me think about what was the block or why you didn't feel that initially you could carry some of these skills or learnings or philosophies into the classroom?
I think because I hadn't seen it done before, and it wasn't on the curriculum. I mean, that then this was also, we're going back to when mindfulness was first, well, when I became aware of mindfulness, because it started to make its appearance a lot more in the corporate sector. And some, you know, there was some body, because I still remember researching some schools to become a mindfulness trained teacher. So I think initially I had that limiting belief that I can't teach children these skills. They're not going to, it's too advanced for them. They might not be able to understand it. So that was the initial block, I think. And also just, I wanted to leave teaching. To be quite honest, I was just fed up with the system. So I was sort of disillusioned and I just wanted to leave the system. But actually, I think the turning point was when I realized how readily these groups of, you know, this group of year six pupils took on what I was telling them, teaching them about their brain, teaching them about cortisol and what happens when we get stressed and all of those sort of things. And that really was the turning point for me. But initially, it definitely was, I would say, my own limiting belief of thinking they might not be able to understand this.
And was that because you mentioned it before about the curriculum and it not being sort of part of the curriculum, or it was round peg square holes type aspect? Because for me, and this is why I'm so pleased to have you on, is working with children over the years and working in schools indirectly, what always fascinates me is that we find ourselves in a position where teaching methods, access to information is more readily available now than it's ever been, and our ability to convey that information is phenomenal with the dawn of neuroscience and involvement of psychology as well. And so we can absorb so much information, but yet we're still squeezing it and pushing it through this, in my word, sort of archaic system, this same structure that we've had for well over 100 years, set out in the same format and boundaries and term times and the way things are set up. It's really interesting, because also, you know, the qualities and characteristics, and please tell me if you agree or disagree, but the qualities and characteristics of a good coach surely resemble that of a good teacher as well.
Yeah, absolutely, definitely. And I think just touching there on what you said, why it definitely can relate to, it just wasn't on the curriculum. And the curriculum, I mean, I know things have moved on quite a bit, but when I was still in the classroom, it was very focused on the academics, very focused on, like you said, trying to tick all these boxes. And yes, there was a bit of room for, you know, personal development, PSHE or whatever, because it always changed, but PSHE, you know, personal social relationships and so forth. But that was almost, because the curriculum was so full and a lot of emphasis is placed on the maths, the science, the writing, that was one of the subjects that would always be kind of fobbed off or left until the end, or, you know, not really given as much attention. So I think, yes, there's just, and I think just there were no models initially at that point for me. And also I think it was just like, well, where do we fit this in? How does this even work? Is this even important? Because we've got to work on getting their scores up, if that makes sense. So I think initially all of that was sort of like little blockers and little bits of resistance. And I think just because I was at a point where I just wanted to leave teaching. I wasn't happy being a teacher. I was disillusioned with what it all was, and, you know, the you know, having to get children to achieve certain scores and standards, but it's all being really difficult in terms of how many children are in a class, and, you know, every child comes with their own needs and their own story. And yeah, I definitely fell out of love with teaching, not with children. And it's really funny, and I'm kind of digressing, but I always used to say, I love teaching, but I want to teach what I'm passionate about. I'm now doing that. But there was also a long period that I just felt incredibly bored. And teaching is not at all boring. I mean, your days are so different and so varied, but I wasn't stimulated by what I was teaching. That didn't light me up. And that's why I knew I had to make a change, because for me, there was something else that I was meant to be doing in this lifetime, doing what I'm doing. And I had to go and find out what that was.
And it was, you know, very much, you know, your undergrad in psychology as well, and the plan to return to South Africa and do your master's in educational psychology as well. So that itch that needed scratching was definitely there. And that blend of the experience from the teaching and the world of psychology and coaching as well has come to fruition in what you are doing.
Yeah. In a very long roundabout way. I think it's Steve Jobs that says, I'm not saying it exactly, but something along the lines of, you know, you can't connect the dots going forward, but they always join when you look back. And that's absolutely my life story. I mean, even if I think back to the days when I was in the midst of wanting to leave teaching, and before I got into coaching, I was, I mean, I loved fitness and I was always in the gym and I loved going to exercise classes. So I actually trained to become a fitness instructor and doing exercise to music. And then I started to teach at the gym, you know, just in the evenings and in the mornings and so forth. But if I look back now, that definitely gave me the confidence to, first of all, tell myself that there are other things I can do, because I definitely had a very, I don't want to say low self-image, but very low self-confidence and didn't believe I could do these things, if that makes sense. And I definitely created a lot of negative stories as to, I can't, you know, I'm a teacher, I can't do anything else. You know, I can't run my own business, I can't go freelance, all of those sort of stories that we create. But and also, you know, I can't speak in public. Like, I'm fine talking to 5 and 6 year olds because they're little people, but there's no ways I could talk to a group of adults. So I think the fitness training and being able to teach classes in front of adults and remember choreography and music, you know what I mean? It's all of that kind of, first of all, A, boosted my confidence and taught me actually I can do something I didn't think I could do, but also gave me the confidence to kind of feel comfortable in front of large groups of people. I mean, now I absolutely love it. I love speaking in front of big groups. But you wouldn't say that, you know, 6-7 years ago. Absolutely not. I'd run a mile.
What an incredible story. And I suppose because of that lived experience, you know, it's those lessons and those challenges and obstacles you've overcome that then enable you to share that with the clients and the children that you're working with as well. That, you know, we all feel fear, we all feel anxious. We're all faced with things that we believe that we can't do, but actually we do have the ability to overcome these obstacles and these challenges.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. And I think, yes, I mean, I use the examples a lot with children. And I mean, I'm still using them. And I think it's, and I often, you know, one of the exercises I give to clients and to little children is think back to the time when you did do something that was difficult that you thought you couldn't do or something that was a challenge. And, you know, how do you feel now about that? You've overcome it. So what skills did you learn? And, you know, obviously using that information to apply in whatever challenge they're currently facing. But I need to do that too, because every time, you know, we're kind of stepping out of our comfort zone and running your own business, you're always having to do new things and you feel scared because you've got to send this email or, you know, or things still come up. But it's just, let's reflect back and see what we have done and kind of use that as ammunition, or should I say as like energy, to kind of help us in this next situation. Yeah.
So it's an important part of the practice to be able to, well, it's very definition is practice what we preach. So what we're asking others to consider and to do and to think, we've got to exhibit those qualities ourselves.
Yes. Oh, yeah. 100%. And I'm always saying I have to practice what I preach. So definitely.
So you, if we may jump back in terms of embarking on that career of teaching, obviously a young Natalie that goes through a teacher training in South Africa, full of sort of hope and promise and desire and enthusiasm to nourish and nurture all these children. What was it that left you so disillusioned and wanting to walk away? What was wrong with the system? What was wrong with teaching?
I think, well, it just at that point, a lot. I think there was a lot. There's 2 points here. I think me, myself as a person, not feeling very confident within myself, is one part of it. So I was looking at the world through that frame of reference, if that makes sense. But also just everything that was required in terms of the target, the assessment, I think just how very little time. I mean, there was a lot of time spent teaching, but it was almost like a lot of the things we had to do was in order to tick a box. A lot of the things just felt, I'm doing this to tick a box, I'm doing this to tick a box. Versus actually perhaps following the interests of the children and nourishing their needs. It was trying to fit a lot into a very full day and perhaps not making space for the things that really mattered, like their emotional well-being, or knowing that those mental and emotional needs are met, but we've got to get the maths marks up, the English marks up. And I think, yeah, or, you know, those sort of things. And also I just, I mean, Ofsted has to play a role. I completely appreciate, you know, we need to make sure that education system does the job that it needs to do. But I remember feeling incredibly anxious going to school many times, thinking, what am I going to do wrong today? What's not good enough today? And like I said, that was coupled definitely with my vision on how I chose to look at things. But how the system was set up also is really difficult sometimes for teachers, in terms of, I'd like to think it's moved on now. And I'm talking about a few, you know, years back when, maybe, I don't know, things were very different. But there were definitely times, I just remember also speaking to colleagues of, just always feel like you're not good enough. There's always one next step you've got to achieve, one next step to achieve. And I completely appreciate that. But it's also really hard when you're spending a lot of hours preparing lessons, planning lessons, putting things forward to children. And I just felt in the system that I was in that it was like, there wasn't this, well done, this is good enough. There's always like, okay, but the next thing, okay, but the next thing. But like I said, you know, that could be coupled with how I chose to perceive things. And I just knew that I was not feeling fulfilled. That was the main thing. It didn't fulfill me. And I just also hit a point where I thought, life is too short to spend how many hours of my day doing something that I really, I'm not feeling fulfilled. I don't want to be living for my weekends. And I mean, there's no job or business out there where things are sunshine, rainbows and unicorns. But I just felt like there is more to my life. There's something else I need to be doing. I think that was the main thing, is that I wasn't feeling fulfilled. And I knew that there was something else that was there for me.
Yeah. And that word fulfillment, you know, just to pick up on that, I couldn't agree more. That the importance for me really in life is how, as you say, how fulfilled, how enriched it really is. It's those moments, those journeys, those paths that we're treading. And if we're not experiencing that fulfillment, then there's a lack of pleasure and purpose that go with that. You said, yeah. Wow, you know, what really struck me was when you said that you were going into work and sort of questioning, you know, what am I going to do wrong today? You know, and that sense of not feeling good enough. And, you know, and I can't help but think that, you know, nobody would do anything. Nobody would go into teaching if that's where they started. And that's a sad sort of position to arrive in, really, isn't it? That, you know, these are the thoughts that wouldn't have been present when you was going for your training. As I said before, it would have, you know, any of us that embark on a new career, and there's that excitement and enthusiasm, and it's, you know, when we find ourselves in that position where we're questioning what we're going to do wrong today, almost predicting that there will be, it becomes a self-fulfilling prophecy, doesn't it? It really, as you said, struck a chord, and actually a memory that it evoked in me, that I remember working with a school many, many years ago and being asked to come in and work with some children in a school because they was exhibiting similar principles, fear of failure, and there was some sort of mental health coping mechanisms presenting. And so I went in and done some observations and studies of the environment and the school, and met with some teachers. And what was fascinating, what came out of that period that I spent before working with any of the children, was that there was this trickle effect, that actually what the school asked me to come in and to work with the children on, and the presenting symptoms that they were experiencing and what the school had advised, actually began at the top of the tree with the members of staff. And it was all starting to trickle down to, and the children, being as animated as they are, were obviously presenting this, whereas staff were finding it easier to hide their fear, their vulnerability and their fragility as well. And I think that's, you know, everything that Power Thought stands for and what it promotes in the children is changing that learning environment for all, really, and that confidence.
Yeah.
And
Yeah.
Thank God you didn't get out of teaching in completely, because you're now, you know, returning with all of this wealth and rich knowledge that you're sharing with the children and the schools that you're working with.
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, I absolutely love it now. And it is, and I do think it all depends on, I think as well, just touching on school environments. And I mean, especially, I think, you know, with working with Power Thoughts, I've been really blessed to work with wonderful, lovely, lovely schools and head teachers and, you know, the powers that be, should we say, that really want to make a difference. And I think as well, even the, you know, the school that I was in was an absolutely lovely school, and the head teacher was, you know, she helped me so much. Well, both the head and the deputy head teacher actually played a big part in me delivering Power Thoughts, because they knew that I wanted to leave, and they were able to kind of at one point, you know, kind of give me roles in the school that would facilitate me to kind of work on my business versus being a full-time class teacher. So, you know, towards the end, and it was even them that sent me on this coaching course initially. But I think even their hands, I think at that point, were quite tied with government regulations, and these are the things that we get told to do. So I think, you know, schools have come a long way in terms of mindsets, in terms of wanting to adopt a better culture. And I think especially over the last few years, how we've seen the importance of mental health and how important it actually is for us and our staff. And even now, you know, it's being highlighted, well-being of teachers. I mean, it's always been there. It's always been really important. But I came across an article, and I can't remember where it was, but just recently in the midst of obviously the pandemic, how much more of an importance it is to look after our teachers' well-being. So I think, you know, it's come a far way. But I think I forgot the point that I was going to mention. I've just gone off on a tangent.
Okay. Do you still feel that we have a distance to travel? Is there still room for improvement?
Yeah, oh, definitely. And I can only speak from my personal experience, but I find head teachers want the support. They want the mental well-being support for their children, but it comes down a lot of the times, the resistance that I find, it comes down to budget cuts. Is budget's always a factor. And then, yes, where do we fit this in on the timetable? So
why do you think, sorry to interject there, Natalie, why do you think we prioritize other sort of metrics or other easy to measure subjects like your maths and English?
I think we're just stuck in time a little bit, because that's what we've always done. I mean, maybe that's not the best answer to give. It's like we just go with, and obviously there is an element of, you know, there is a, you know, math, science, English, writing, all of those things are very, very important. Don't get me wrong. They are very important. But are there some things that, and I wouldn't know what it is, but I do think we're a bit stuck in the system. I do think it's a little bit behind in terms, especially of where we see the world going. And I mean, I remember when I was at school, the idea was that you go to school, you go to university, you get a job, you stay in your job. But I mean, things have changed so drastically. Small businesses, entrepreneurs, I'm not saying everybody needs to be an entrepreneur, because not everybody should be an entrepreneur. I think we need a mixture of all sorts of people. But, you know, there are jobs that are going to be out there that haven't been invented yet. Technology, you know, virtual reality, all of these things are advancing to such a degree. But sometimes, and I know that some schools, their curriculum and what they offer the children now blows my mind. So I can only talk from my experience from teaching in the classroom. Sometimes we would kind of feel like we're a bit stuck in the ages, and do things need to be changed? I mean, even if we look at how children are taught in sort of the classroom, factory worker style, you know, get up, the bell goes, that sort of thing. I mean, things are very, very different now to what it was many years ago, when perhaps we needed these systems to help us. Whereas things, you know, the world looks very different now. I mean, it would be really interesting to see how education will change and shift moving forward after the pandemic, you know, as we move into this kind of new phase, because clearly we've shown, we've shown that learning can take place in a different way they're obviously, you know, they 100% needs to be space for children to have face-to-face interaction and play with their friends, because I think they really miss that now, and that has a big part of mental health. But when it comes to the teaching side, we're looking, well, there's a little bit more freedom and flexibility, because, you know, perhaps it was never even considered to have online teaching. And I mean, online teaching definitely does have its downfalls as well, because a lot of clients I work with at the moment are just absolutely bored with online lessons, you know, and I completely understand that. But is there some things that we can bring from what we've been through now that can change how education looks in the future?
And also
you know, recognizing, and how, you know, and also recognizing that children, in all of this that has happened, children have really had to learn to adapt, to become comfortable with some very uncomfortable feelings and to deal with uncertainty. But none of that is taught on a worksheet, you know, well, unless you come to my sessions where it might be on a worksheet or a session, but, you know, it's not in a textbook or in, you know, in the classic learning that children have had. But bearing in mind, in saying that, I know some schools have progressed phenomenally, so they, this probably is being taught. But I think going back to your initial question, the resistance there is budget is a big, big thing. And then, yes, you know, perhaps prioritizing some other subjects that maybe now we could see, oh, is there a different way of doing this?
Mm. Well, I echo what you say, that I hope out of this period of adversity, this challenging time, you know, we have all been forced to work in different ways, and schools massively so, you know, they've had to keep going in one form or another. And I do hope that the dynamic of teaching can change somewhat. My initial question around the why we measure as well, it makes me sort of consider, is it because the maths, the English and reading, etc., are easier to measure than well-being, than development, than our emotional health? And those sort of shades of grey which society struggles with quite often is too much, that, you know, we can't just, because we can't measure well-being, I mean, we can to some extent, but essentially it has to be very qualitative, it has to be very rich, it has to be very narrative in its form, and quite often society expects this black and white, this certainty, this one size fits all, and this, you know, people have heard me say it before, this broken fixed model. I just wonder, perhaps sometimes there's a fear around not necessarily prioritizing it, but finding time for emotional well-being in schools is challenged, not just financially. I think, yeah, I agree with you there, absolutely. There's a big burden on that. And perhaps what underpins that even further is the fact that people fear the return that you're going to get from it. Because I often find, having conversations with some schools, as you said before, some are fantastic at it, embrace it, and want to support all the children and the staff, and other schools are a little apprehensive and almost see it as like a product. Okay, so we'll purchase this, what will we then do with the kids, how will then that will then be measured or graded against, thank you very much, you know, like an off-the-shelf well-being tool, as it were.
And I think as well, I think well, and I mean, I'm speaking here, I have no evidence, this is just my personal thoughts, but we weren't taught any of this when we were at school. So I know, just with slightly older young people I work with, actually, if I think about, actually back to a 22-year-old that I was working with not too long ago, he said to me, I'm still struggling to understand my emotions and my feelings. I wasn't taught this at school. And I mean, this actually, you know, echoes how many parents I work with that say, I need some of this because I wasn't taught this. So I think there's also, you obviously, like, you know, in any, you know, you have some people who are really open to teaching about this, who want to learn more. But then also there's that, oh, well, I don't understand. You know, there could also be the other side, but perhaps people don't want to embrace it. So I think it's also maybe some staff, I mean, and you know, teachers' plate is incredibly full. I think there's so much on their plates that they have to teach, and then to now be trained up and deliver this other thing as well, you know, it kind of adds to, I'm just thinking, you know, is that maybe another factor as well that might be a bit of cause a bit of a detriment because it's something else I've got to train in as well. And perhaps not feeling confident to train or to deliver it.
Yeah, confidence, I think, you know, for everybody. I suppose it's like you touched on earlier when you trained as a PT, and that you know, there was a nervousness there, but it then gave you the confidence to go on and do more things as a result of that as well. And I suppose we all feel our confidence is elevated or increased when we've got knowledge and we've had an opportunity to practice and do things a few times. So, Natalie, as we discussed off air before, I said that we would have sort of a 20-25 minute conversation, but I knew that it would go over the half hour mark before I played one of your first songs. So I do apologize. I end up nattering for too long. My guest today, Natalie Costa, has chosen her two songs for today's show. This is her first one. Stick with us here on The Happiness Algorithm. We'll be back after this.
Phoenix FM.
Welcome back to The Happiness Algorithm with me, James Roast. I'm joined today by Natalie Costa from Power Thoughts, and that was her first song choice, Mr. Bob Marley, Three Little Birds. That's an amazing song, absolutely amazing song.
Oh, I love it.
If you want a song to sort of lift your mood, you know, there's one right there. any particular reason why you chose the song, or was it just because it is a feel-good song?
It's a feel-good song, but it was something that my dad also, although my dad would I come from a family that does tend to worry a lot, but my dad would sometimes sing the song, so it's one of those that stuck. So I choose to pay attention to this.
Love it. I love it. Yeah. Excellent. So Natalie, before we took that break, we spoke around the curriculum, around what Power Thoughts does, what you do as a coach, and having been someone that's been in teaching and education for over 10 years, and where the sort of the challenges are for children coming through school. When I was sort of pulling together the notes for the show, what I come across was a statistic, I think it was from your website, that blew me away, that 92% of children fear failure.
Yeah, I mean, that was, I did a survey in the school that I was at. So basically, when I started to teach children about their thoughts, what I mentioned earlier in the previous bit, the deputy head teacher, and because I'd received some really great feedback from the parents, I mean, I had a mum stop me on the way home from work one day, and she's like, whatever you're doing with my daughter, please carry on. I had another mum email me saying, my son's coming out of his shell. So that, like I said, was kind of like the beginning point of Power Thoughts. But then I had to start to be like, well, I need to bring this, if you call it personal development and mindset work, to children. So I decided to work with a mentor and a dear friend of mine, Lucy Sheridan. And we came up with surveys and stuff that I obviously formalized as to see, well, what are the particular needs of the children? I think I know what they are, but let me hear from the children. So I am blessed. And I mean, a big shout out to all the teachers that helped me with this, because we know that getting young children, especially when they, 5, 6, 7, 8, on a laptop each, in the old school laptops that we had, is not easy. But I put a survey together just for my own to understand, what do children worry about? What kind of keeps them up at night? I didn't use that language, it's more child-friendly speak. But I surveyed the children, I think they were from year 2 to year 6. And I mean, the findings that I found there were, it was 92% of those children were afraid of making mistakes and getting things wrong. And that comment there, really struck me. I think you mentioned it. I feel like I'm a tortoise stuck in a shell. And those are just one of the things that children had said. And I definitely still stand by that, because if I look at when I go into schools today and I deliver workshops, I mean, I'm not doing the full-on surveys with them, but when it comes to the topic of mistakes and getting things wrong, nearly all of them are afraid. And I mean, it's a big reason why parents also get in touch with me saying, I just want my child to, my child makes mistakes, they get very upset. I want my child to know that it's okay to make mistakes. If they make a mistake, it's a tantrum, it's a meltdown, or they're too afraid to try new things. And I mean, I can definitely relate to that as well. There's definitely been times when I've held myself back for fear of failure, for fear of getting things wrong. But I guess with my expertise and the books I read and what I've studied, I know that that's part of the process. But when you're 5, 6, 7, 8, it just doesn't feel good. And you look at your friends who are able to do things, or you get frustrated because you can't do something. And so, it's very easy to start developing those stories and telling yourself those stories as to, making mistakes is bad, or that you can't do it. And I think also, if we then go back to the school, your work being marked and so forth, it can sometimes we can create those stories that we're not good enough because we don't get 10 out of 10 in our spelling, but my friend does and I only got 3 out of 10, or whatever that might be.
Listening to you talk about it there, it makes me think it's a shame, because when we're very young, we're learning to walk or ride a bike, that fear is not there, because otherwise no one would learn to ride a bike or walk, because we fail constantly. We don't just get up on 2 feet and start walking. We're constantly falling over. The infant will always stumble and trip, but yet that fear is not there. And I suppose there lies the tragedy, that fear then starts to creep in. And with such an overwhelming statistic and value on that 92% of the children showing that fear. It's a real shame. Then thinking about the work that you do, how can we bring children forward then? And what do you do with the children that gets them to a point where they're managing that discomfort?
Yeah, I mean, well, you know, we first go back to basics and understand the mind-body connection, specifically exploring, you know, what happens in our brain when we feel big feelings. And I mean, big feelings could be the fear, could be frustration, could be worry, could be any kind of those feelings where perhaps I kind of, we say to children, like, I kind of give my power away and maybe I'm not able to, you know, be as resourceful as what I normally would like. And first understanding, you know, what happens in our brain and why we behave the way that we do. Because, I mean, you know this, but, you know, our brain is there to keep us alive. And, you know, the stress response, it's a survival mechanism. But a lot of the things that maybe causes me today to give, flip my lid, so to say, or to give my power away to my big feelings, aren't life or death threatening, like not being able to do a tricky maths problem or not being able to make it into the first team in football or whatever it might be. But in that moment, my body doesn't know, you know, my brain and body don't know the difference. And I've kind of pressed that false alarm that perhaps causes these big feelings. So first taking them back to the basics of understanding that and beginning to recognize what their different feelings are and how we feel these feelings in our body, and also beginning to pay attention to the stories we tell ourselves. You know, so what makes me feel big feelings? Where do I feel these feelings in my body? And what is it that I'm telling myself? I mean, we spend a lot of time on that. You know, it's not just a one-off session or a couple of minutes, because children do struggle sometimes, think, oh, well, I don't know what I'm telling myself. And even, I mean, I can definitely think back to times when I feel stressed. I might not know the exact words, but I can associate, I know the feeling. I can remember, like, it's that dull thud in the stomach or the butterflies in my tummy, or, you know, my muscles get really strong and tight, you know, when we work with children. And then also, and giving them obviously strategies to help with that, so that there are certain things that I can start to then do to hold on to my power a little bit more, or to help me in those moments, to ground me and to come back to my space of where I can be my best or think through this problem properly. So giving them some tools and strategies to manage that. And then we also spend time specifically looking at our thoughts and the narratives, and, you know, specifically beginning to unpick some of those unhelpful thoughts, as we say, that get in our way, and the different types of unhelpful thoughts. And again, I mean, this is all through stories and role play and sharing examples of children, you know, and then children being able to share when they've had their unhelpful thoughts. I mean, I was working with a little girl just the other week who was saying, you know, when we were exploring her thoughts, that I think I'm worthless because I've made this mistake. Or a little boy that I worked with, you know, I'm such a failure, or I'm rubbish at maths, or my brothers are better at me than whatever it might be. So beginning to unpick those unhelpful thoughts, but then having some fun with it. So a big part of what I do is helping, you know, we play games or we get really creative. So we explore those unhelpful thoughts, but we give them a character, we give them a name, we personify them. So the children begin to recognize it's just a thought. It's not the core of me, you know, they sort of create that little bit of distance. We catch these unhelpful thoughts. So, you know, I've done my maths and I think I'm rubbish at this. Let's catch that thought. And then we reframe that thought and we challenge it with the voice of our superhero in a superhero. And then we start to look at, you know, what happens inside our brain when we make mistakes and when we do things that are hard or challenging. So I often use the metaphor of exercise, just like I need to exercise my body to get good at swimming, or I need to exercise, you know, certain muscles to play football or to play tennis. So I need to exercise my brain, but my brain gets really good exercise when it does things that feel difficult and challenging, when I'm making those mistakes. I show children clips of what our brain looks like on the inside in terms of the neural connections. You know, and then, you know, we use Play-Doh to model how we stretch our brain when we're doing new things, exploring previous things that we've done that were difficult and tricky and a challenge, but now we're really good at it. What did we have to do to get good at that? You know, what were the processes? What did we learn? And also looking at what mistakes did you make? So, you know, I'll get children, you know, if you're talking about gymnastics, you're very good. Tell me about a mistake that you made. You know, and I mean, a girl was telling me recently it was cartwheels. So I said to her, what did you learn from that mistake? If you could give me one tip to be good at doing a cartwheel, what would that be? So she quickly was able to say, oh, point your toes, you know, keep your legs up straight. But that came because she'd made some mistakes. So helping them to kind of put on a different pair of glasses, should I say, look at it through a different filter. And I mean, obviously with parents' support, getting into the habit of asking yourselves those questions of, you know, what have I learned from this mistake? How is this a good thing? You know, what do I know now that I didn't know before? As well as also, you know, using the Play-Doh and pipe cleaners to make neurons and new connections, but just helping them to see that actually these challenges and these mistakes is helping my brain grow stronger. It's making more connections. And something else that I teach is, you know, something called a yes moment, because a little boy that I was working with was prepping to do his 7+ exams. And I mean, a highly intelligent little boy, but really struggled when it came to making mistakes. And he would give himself a really hard time. So I kind of made this up on the spot, but it's stuck ever since. And it's something that I share with all my clients. I said to him, every time you make a mistake, I want you to celebrate it. I want you to get up. I want you to jump up and down. I want you to give yourself a little shout, like woohoo, give a whoop whoop, you know, give yourself a high five, do a little dance, because you've made a mistake, because you are busy growing more connections in your brain. And then I said to him, what I want you to do is I actually want you to write down, what have you learned from this mistake? So you've got your mistake, but then what have you learned because of the mistake? And I want you to keep a list. And I mean, the next week when I went to see him, he came to me with his yes moment list, and he was really excited because he had a whole list of new things that he'd learned. So he was slowly starting to shift his perspective of, oh, I'm rubbish, I've made this mistake, to actually, yes, I've made this mistake. This is hard, but this is what I'm learning from it. And it was like a visual reminder to consistently remind him, these are the things I'm learning. I mean, guaranteed, you know, some of those mistakes, we sometimes need to make a few mistakes over and over again before we learn the lesson. I think especially when it comes to, if I think of academics, you know, fractions or problem solving and so forth. But it just helped him to shift that perspective that actually, yes, these were things were hard, but this is what I'm learning because of that.
I mean, I could just listen to you all day. I'm busy scribbling down notes as you're talking. I can't help but think that there is so much that we can all take from that. You know, I mean, there's the strap line for the show right off. Giving my power away to the big feelings. Yeah. I mean, how often, even as adults, are we sort of giving our power away to those big feelings in some way? And I think that the mix between what was really making it accessible is because it was provoking the child in me that I was thinking, you know what, that here's some stuff I want to get the pipe cleaners out and start making neurons and neuro pathways and connecting new habits and understanding it, because sometimes I think we can intellectualize situations and cause more problems for ourselves, that we overcomplicate it, whereas distilling it down in its purest simple form just makes it so much more palatable, you know, thoughts are not the core me. For a child to, as we said before about that sense of failure, and 92% of children fearing the F word, it being failure.
Yeah.
We can fear it, but it doesn't define who they are. And well, you know, I think that anyone listening should start writing a yes moment list, because that's where, I mean, the potency in that is incredible, because it doesn't become a list of failures. It becomes a list of learning opportunities. That's incredible.
Absolutely. And I think like that's the key thing. And of course, it doesn't feel good. Of course, it feels hard. If you think about, and I'm just using the metaphor of exercise, but if I want to get fit, I'm going to hate doing the burpees and the press-ups, and I might only be able to do one, but the next you know, maybe the next week I'm able to do four, and the next week I'm able to do six. And it's, but it's not going to be a piece of cake. It's going to be difficult, but it's in that process, and it's just being able to, I think as well, because what I also found is, you know, with children, it's like we, and as adults too, and I did this for a long time, definitely in my early years of teaching before I kind of woke up to all of this, is you attach your self-worth to the external things, the scores I get, the marks I get, when actually, if I'm going to be doing that, then I'm not going to get very far, because in order to be successful, I'm going to have to fall flat on my face quite a few times and learn a lot of painful lessons, and things aren't going to work. So if I attach my self-worth to the end result, you know, to the outer bits, that's not going to help me. Whereas if I could shift that perspective and think, okay, this is like a muscle, you know, and I literally, you know, with children, our brain is like a muscle. And it's always making those new little connections when we do those challenging things. And that, you know, like I said, we make that mistake. We don't feel good. We feel embarrassed. We feel shame. We feel frustrated. All of the things that children tell me. But then let's shift that. And this is sort of like, you know, it's kind of giving me, you know, that cliched way, but it's that step, that next stepping stone to do differently, to do that one best bet. And I think when we also help children explore people who are successful, you know, whether they're in the public eye or not, but I get them to go and look, you know, what are all of the setbacks, the rejections, the disappointments, the no's, the bullying that they received, go and look at that. And then what did your person do as a result of that? You know, did they allow it to keep them stuck? Did they allow it to kind of decide, that's it, I'm not doing it? No, that kind of became like ammunition, or kind of gave them the energy to kind of go again, you know? So it's just, again, about being aware of your thoughts, and you don't have to believe every stupid thought you think, you know, it's like an ongoing thing. But then also let's shift that perspective. How can I make this work for me rather than against me? And it does take time, you know, it's not always a pretty picture. You know, you're still going to get the tears, you're still going to have some of the meltdowns, but then are we going to get back up a little bit quicker? Are we going to do differently the next time?
And we've all got that opportunity to learn this.
Yeah, yeah.
No matter how old we are.
Absolutely. And, you know, I always say, you know, it's a practice. Every moment is an opportunity to practice. It's not a performance. I don't have to get it 100% right. But in this challenge, it's an opportunity to practice some of these tools. And just kind of use every opportunity there as sort of like your teacher, as a practice. You know, versus thinking, I have to get this, do this, this way now, which I found has definitely been helpful for myself as well.
Well, I'm busy scribbling that down as well. It's a practice, not a performance, because I couldn't agree more. I think that, again, society sort of pushes on us sometimes that perfection, that performance, we've got to get it right each and every time. But, you know, every opportunity is that learning opportunity, is that practice each time. So that's more notes to self. I'm running out of paper here. So Natalie, talk to me about the sort of format then, in terms of the delivery. You say it takes a while, the children, the schools that you go in, the clients that you're working with as well. What does it look like in reality, in terms of some of the lessons and the sessions that you teach?
Yeah. So, well, it varies. I mean, with schools, some schools would have me come in to deliver a series of workshops. So initially I set it out to be like a 10-week curriculum, but quickly realized that wasn't going to be the plan, because budget didn't always, you know, equate to that, and space on the timetable. And so what then started to happen is some schools said, oh, could you come in and deliver like a half day workshop? So on a particular theme, so which I initially did. And then another school said, oh, I like the half day workshop idea. Could you come and deliver three half day workshops? So then I sort of took for my 10-week program and made it into three sessions. So typically now, I mean, I'll either go into a school over the duration of the year where I might deliver, say, three sessions, so one per term, followed up with a feedback session for staff and a, you know, feedback session for parents as well. But other schools might have me come in, say, for a 6-week period and only work with a particular group of children, like the year fives or the year sixes. And then other schools might just have like a standalone workshop on a topic. So I'm quite flexible. I kind of go with what schools want, because I just find that that's easier in terms of their budget and so forth. Whereas with my private work, it is my full, I've condensed the 10 weeks into 8 sessions. So I've either got my full program of 8 sessions or, you know, parents might invest in 4 sessions and later on move on to the 8. But it does start off initially with kind of teaching children first about their brain and their emotions, because I think that's, you know, we have to understand how to look after our brain and to work with our brain in terms of managing the stress and our feelings to get us into a receptive state before we can, you know, if we're in that fight or flight, we're not going to be aware of the stories we tell ourselves or the impact of the negative thinking, or be open to kind of the problem solving strategies when it comes to mistakes and all of those sort of things, you know, and confidence and so forth. So yes, and then I mean, I've recently started to deliver online programs, group coaching programs to families and to children, which I'm thoroughly enjoying. And that basically takes a little bit out of all the sessions and kind of condensing it into 5 days, kind of like a bit of a Power Thoughts boot camp, I suppose.
Yeah, and this is you've been sharing some of this on social media as well, haven't you?
Yes.
I mean, it's been keeping you extremely busy,
yeah.
Quite intense over those 5 days as well, but I'm sure hugely rewarding.
Yeah, no, absolutely is. I mean, and it's been a real joy to kind of work with groups of children. And it's been really easy as well. I was a bit apprehensive because I think the inner teacher in me wants to make sure everybody's listening, everybody's paying attention. And here I'm bringing a whole group of random children together. So, but it's actually been working really, really well, you know, and children, I'm not able to see the children just because of safety purposes and Zoom and all sorts of stuff. Mm. And obviously some children actually prefer not to be seen by other children, which I've received some emails from parents saying they quite like the setup that children just see me, but all the children are able to interact in the chat section, you know, so that's been going really well. And then I've also started to expand and deliver talks in the corporate sector as well to parents. Because I used to do, I did this all the time when I did after school talks, but those were always quite difficult to capture because not all parents could make it. So obviously because they're working, so I've started to approach corporate sectors, and I've actually been doing quite a few this year in terms of sharing, doing talks for parents and sharing tools that parents can use to support their children. And that I'm really, really enjoying as well. So
excellent.
That's something else I've currently been tapping into.
And that's all with the following the same sort of thread, the same sort of teaching.
Yeah, absolutely. So in my talks for parents, it would very much be talking and sharing tools about what they can do to help manage some of the big feelings at home that their children have, but teaching parents about the brain and what's happening in their child's brain, as well as when it comes to making mistakes, and giving them some practical tools that they can use to support their child to understand that their brain is making more connections and neurons, and using some really fun games that are really easy and applicable. You know, it's not a long-winded activity that they have to go and do and takes up a lot of time. And, you know, also when it comes to managing some of those negative and unhelpful thoughts as well.
So, share some of those games with us so for the listeners, parents that are listening that they'd like to sort of do with their children.
Yes,
fun games.
So I mean, you know, when it comes to the big feelings, we often something I teach is called power breathing, and I mean it's just been adapted from the 7-11 breathing, because I just found it was quite difficult for myself and for children to kind of breathe in for 7 counts and, you know, breathe out for 11. So power breathing is by breathing in for 3 counts and out for 5. And often I'd use like a big, like kind of expandable ball. I don't know what you call them. I Googled expandable ball, but it's like one of those little mindfulness balls that if you can kind of pull them up and they get bigger, and then like you can kind of squeeze them back, that they come back. We, you know, so encouraging them to use that. So we breathe in and we expand this ball, we breathe out, we blow some bubbles as well. When it comes to making mistakes, the yes moment is something that I do, encouraging children to, you know, record their mistake but then let's write down what is the, you know, what did I learn because of this mistake? Sorry, and I see my Google Pod is busy talking to me. Let me just quickly switch that off. Bear with me, because okay. It's distracting me. I don't know what she's saying. sorry, that kind of threw me off course. And actually encouraging, you know, children to kind of go on a scavenger hunt and to catch their mistakes, should I say, because every time, you know, or challenge, if something's difficult, let's write that down and then let's see if we can find the yes moment or the magic within that mistake. And that's that I've been told, you know, families really like to use, especially just talking around the dinner table about, you know, what magic did you find in your mistake today? Or what's the yes moment that you had today? To kind of start shifting that conversation when it comes to making mistakes. And, you know, the tools that I share as well aren't designed to be, let me go do my Power Thoughts homework and take an hour. These are designed to be done in little snippets throughout the day. So even getting children to, again, when it comes to emotions, because I don't know about you, but I find children might say things like, I feel happy, sad, or mad. But they, you know, there's such a wealth of other emotions that we feel. And children, I find, don't always have the words to explain how they feel. So they might be feeling really embarrassed, but it comes out in anger, or frustrated, but it comes out in this big blowout. So I encourage, you know, families to print off just, I mean, a basic feelings chart that you can get off Google, put that up in the kitchen and just have little conversations with your children throughout the day, or as you're cooking, or as you're sitting around the table, of, you know, what is jealousy? Where do you feel jealous? What does it look like? When have you felt jealous versus perhaps feeling embarrassed or frustrated? And also then discuss, you know, what would have helped you? What helps you when you feel frustrated? Or, you know, what helps you when you feel embarrassed? Is it that, you know, a little girl I was working with, you know, all she said to me, she's like, I want to cuddle, versus if I'm frustrated, I actually just want some time out. But we don't always have the opportunity, you know, we don't always have these discussions with our children, and they don't always think about it like this. But if we can start to weave it into our everyday conversations with them, just in little bits throughout the day, I mean, we're slowly starting to build their emotional vocabulary, build their, you know, self-awareness and understanding of themselves. You know, in that way, they're better able to talk about their feelings and, you know, share what it is that they're feeling, labeling their emotions and being able to express how they feel.
It's, you know, as I said before, I think everyone can take something from it, you know. Even as adults, building our emotional vocabulary is something that, you know, can often be running at a deficit. But for children embarking on this journey and treading the path towards sort of adolescence and adulthood as well, I think all of the work that you're doing is cultivating and enabling them to become much more robust creatures, little humans that can manage the world probably far better than most of us adults are at the minute as well. It's an honourable job and work that you're doing, Natalie. It's absolutely incredible. We must go to your second show. We must go to your second song. You can have a second show, have a third one if you like as well. Honestly, I'm grabbing more paper as you're speaking. So let's go to Natalie Costa, who is my guest today here on The Happiness Algorithm. Let's go to her second song choice. Stay with us. We'll be back after this.
Takes over me. Yes, I'm dandy. I Phoenix FM.
Welcome back to the Happiness Algorithm with myself, James Roast, and my very special guest, Natalie Costa from Power Thoughts. That was her second song choice. That was Candy by Cameo. That was a good song, right?
Yeah, definitely.
Any particular meaning, reason behind that song? But again, sitting next to Bob Marley, another good song.
Yeah, I think it came back from the days when I used to still teach gym instruction, like the gym stuff I used to do. So there were a group of friends. We always used, this used to be like one of the cool down songs. And it's quite a nice vibey pick me up song.
A good song. Another song to get people's toes tapping, you know, shoulders rolling very much.
Absolutely.
So Natalie, obviously, we've explored sort of your journey into teaching, into education, the conflict, the challenge between sort of what the hope was and the frustration and becoming disillusioned by the system, and then embarking on a career of fitness and pushing yourself in terms of presenting and teaching in front of others, and then rekindling with that sort of fire of psychology and merging the two, really. And what's interesting is the thread that runs through that narrative is that you're coaching, you're teaching others, you're nurturing, sharing information, sharing knowledge with others, and allowing them to grow as individuals. That must be something that's very important to you.
Yeah, definitely. And I think when I get the feedback from parents telling me how children are still using the tools 2 years later, or they're not allowing those thoughts of worry or anxiety to get in their way the way they initially would, and actively applying these tools. And I think we both know, the importance of developing those neural pathways and being able to teach children this from a younger age, so that they're just being able to be in a position where they've got, can develop these positive or helpful habits, should I say, is really, what it just makes all the difference, receiving those messages from parents telling me how the children are continue to use the tools, because that's where the magic is. And it's about just helping them recognize that there is another way, and again, it goes back, you don't have to believe all the thoughts that you think, or respond to all of those feelings. There are other things that we can do.
Absolutely. So obviously we are living in, we touched on it earlier with regards to schools and teachers and how they're operating at the minute. And they are strange times that we're living in. What advice or what words of wisdom can you share with parents, teachers, and children, if children are listening as well, what they can be doing now in these really, well, as I say, very, very strange times?
Yeah, I mean, it is strange. I think, I think it's been definitely a lot of uncertainty, a lot of unknown. And it can obviously be easy to quite worry about things, those what if scenarios, and kind of really worry about things in the future, especially because we've not been through something like this before. So there's no like blueprint. So I think, again, we always have a choice with regards to how we respond. And we can either choose to get disheartened, not disheartened, but we can kind of let it get the better of us, or we could use it to help us grow, and we can use it to help us come out the other end with even more skills that aid to our strength and our resilience. Something that I often use myself and with clients as well is that, what is within your control? We can't control where the spike virus is and the spreading of it, or what's going on in terms of even wanting to touch on the protests and Black Lives Matters and all of that we're now seeing as well. So it's not just the pandemic, but it's all of that as well that's coming up. But what can you do in your immediate circle in this moment right now, or in these next days? What is it something that you can do? What is within your control? Because so often the things that we worry about are things that are out of our control. So what are the things that I can do something about? So even if it's as simple as, going back to school, perhaps, or worrying about going back to school, I know because some children, the older children, have been worried about being left behind, but are there things that I can do that will help me with my learning right now, whatever that might be? I mean, and before, you know, when the pandemic first went, you know, happened and we were all stuck at home, a lot of children were worried about grandparents or family members that they couldn't see. But in this moment, I could maybe write them a letter, or we could FaceTime them, or I could go with my mum and get groceries for one of our neighbours, or take the groceries to Granny and Grandpa. So bringing it back to the present moment, I think, is a really powerful exercise, because you know, if we're in the present moment, then well, that's all we've got right now. So what can I do in this moment? And I think also just allowing children the space to feel the feelings. I think letting them, opening up that space for them to come and talk to you about their feelings, if they are feeling uncomfortable, you know, the uncomfortable feelings that I call them, you know, like the ones where you feel sad, we feel scared, that it's okay to feel these feelings. Acknowledge that it's okay to feel that, because sometimes we might not want to talk about these things because we think we're going to make the situation worse, when actually by not talking about these feelings, it allows them to fester. Whereas if they can kind of just have a safe space where they can talk about them, acknowledge them, and also appreciate that, you know, sometimes we might not, it's not business as usual, is allowing a little bit of room to perhaps not always stick to the plan. Because I think sometimes we can want things to go a certain way, but because given the pandemic and all the uncertainty, you know, we're operating on a lot more stress hormones and, you know, levels of stress than what we might normally do if things are quite certain. So just allowing a bit of that space to be a bit softer, and perhaps looking at what activities will help your child feel safe and grounded and nourished. Maybe it is extra cuddles, or maybe it is having just some time to kind of just not have to do anything that might be on the to-do list to do, but just kind of allow you to feel some of those feelings.
Yeah, so to be present with the child and to go with it, as you say, just to sort of be present with those emotions. What about any sort of advice for parents that maybe are frightened about asking the question, or what about the big emotions, if a child does disclose any big emotions, and there's the parent or the teacher in this instance are a little bit anxious about that?
Yeah, I think when it comes to so I think, you know, it's just asking your, I was speaking to the child the other day, so how do you feel about this? So something had happened, I don't know, about the pandemic, and he was clearly scared or worried. So it's just like, how does this make you feel? Just that open question. And then he was able to open up, and then I was able to kind of lead the question from that way. So we also don't want to like over bombard them with information that they might not be developmentally appropriate, you know, ready for yet. But in terms of the pandemic, or what's been happening in the world in terms of the marches and Black Lives Matters, you know, what do you know about it, you know, or what have you heard? And then seeing where the conversation goes from that, and kind of directing, you know, you going with their lead versus us going in there with a lot of information. But I think as well, when it comes to tools to alleviate that, I mean, many times children will tell me, sometimes I just want to be left alone or some things, or I want to have some cuddles. Or a little girl I was working with, you know, she's like, I like to read the special book that I've got on feelings. Like, that's my thing. Where I like to take my soft toy. But it could also be, I mean, you know, it could also, maybe there are some things you could suggest with your child, like a soothing toolkit. What could we put in our toolkit that makes us feel a bit better? Is it your favorite toy? Is it a photo? I mean, little boy's working with it was a photo of his dad. So have those conversations with them, and perhaps even share with them about your feelings. Because I think sometimes parents think, oh, I don't want to show my child I'm upset. But actually, they need to see us, you know, we have feelings too. We've got insecurities too. And actually, can you help me? You know, what might, so this is what helps mummy when I feel a bit sad. I like to come and get some cuddles, or I like to read my book. But model that to them as well. Because we, at the end of the day, you know, as teachers, as parents, we're there, we are the best teacher for our children.
Absolutely. I couldn't agree with that more. And I think even going back to what you said earlier in the show about it, it's practice, not a performance for parents or teachers. you know, there's no wrong. I think if we, yeah, if we fear getting it wrong, then the chances are, we'll, as we said at another point earlier in the show, it becomes a self-fulfilling prophecy. Whereas actually, if we, to go with your advice there, in that sense of go with what the child wants, you know, join, yeah, the flow of the child, as opposed to trying to fix the problem as such. So
yeah,
explore together.
Exactly. And I mean, and that it's okay to not have all the answers. So actually this morning I received a DM from a mum saying that, you know, her little son is going back to nursery, but his friend isn't going. Do I have any resources regarding friendship breakups or, you know, because she said, she basically, I think, I can't remember her exact words, but she said, you know, I just told him that your friend probably won't be coming back. And that's okay. I think, you know, it's, you know, we're not always going to be there to fix the problem. And that's the other thing as well. And obviously, you know, as parents, as teachers, we don't want our children to feel upset. You know, we want to protect them. We want to, you know, what's the right thing to do? But sometimes the very best thing is when they are feeling some of those uncomfortable feelings, but that they are not alone, that we are there with them. So yes, he's going back to nursery. His friend's not going to be there. I can't fix that for you, but could we maybe write your friend a postcard? Could we FaceTime your friend? Could we start to look at what other friends might be coming to your nursery, new friends that might be coming to join? And that it's okay to feel a little bit sad if our friend's not there, but the sad feeling will pass as well. You know, the sad feeling will pass. And that, I think sometimes the best thing we can do for our children is to experience some of those feelings, obviously in a way that is safe. You know, I'm not saying let them just, you know, immerse in all of these painful feelings. Absolutely yeah. not, you know, like, but there is room for that, because that's obviously where we ultimately develop those muscles of resilience and being able to deal with difficulties, because that's a part of life.
Well, I was going to say, that is life, isn't it? You know, there's always, you know, one guarantee with life is that there's always going to be difficulty, there's always going to be sadness, there's always going to be emotional challenges and conflict that we're facing. And if we create these behaviors of avoidance or pretending they're not happening, it's only going to bite us in the backside further down the line. And you know, look, I as I say, I couldn't agree more. And everything you've said on today's show, I'm 100% behind you on that. And giving our children the opportunity to sit with some of these, you say, not overindulge, but accept them and embrace them. And, you know, as you said, that controllability factor, what can we do? We can write that postcard. We can Zoom grandparents. We can, you know, pick up the telephone and or message. And this is wonderful. Now, Natalie, I am certain, I'm absolutely certain that listeners will want to know more. And I'm sorry that I can't give them more on this show because we could have quite easily. Well, yeah. I'd have taken up the full 8-week course, I think, or the 10-week program without a doubt. But we share with the listeners your social media, your website. How can people get in touch, or how can they read more about Power Thoughts, Natalie, and more of what you do?
Yes, yeah, sure. Thank you. So my website, which is powerthoughts.co.uk, is where people can get in touch with me. You can also send me a message on there, a message box that comes straight through. And also I'm on Instagram a lot. So my handle is at powerthoughts, N for Natalie, C for Costa. So it's powerthoughtsnc. I'm also on Facebook, Power Thoughts by Natalie Costa. Yeah, so those are the places I mostly hang out. You know, feel free to get in touch or send me a message. I've also co-authored on 2 activity books for children with a friend of mine, Beth Cox, and the company is called Be Small Publishers. So the 2 books are activity books for children called Find Your Power and Stretch Your Confidence. So those are for children between the ages of, I think, 6 to 12-ish, about primary school age. So those are 2 other activity books as well. But all of that's on my website and Instagram and stuff as well.
Well, I will be, I'll certainly be looking at those books. There'll be some great resources to add to the tool box without fail. Well, Natalie, what haven't I taken from the show? I've got scribbles everywhere, blue highlighted sections all over my show notes. But look, big feelings, giving my power away to the big feelings. Without doubt, what that's an amazing sort of powerful strapline. Mm-hmm. Simplicity, having fun and playing games and not overcomplicating stuff. The practice, it's not a performance. I think that will stay with me forever. Yeah. I think that, you know, and I'll share that with others as well. Too often we can take life too seriously and believe that actually this is about perfection and getting it all right, but it's a constant state of practice. Power breathing, I couldn't advocate anymore. I agree with that. Love the cat scavenger hunts as well. I mean, you've turned thinking on its head. You know, the whole belief that making mistakes is a negative, but you've literally caused an inversion where now we're pioneering the mistake, because that gives us that opportunity, and that is that yes moment. Let's celebrate those mistakes so we can learn from them.
Absolutely.
And when there are difficulties, refining it down to what we are in control of, what can we do? And I will embark on this next week and for the foreseeable future to find the magic in the mistakes that I make.
There
are plenty. Natalie, it's been an absolute pleasure. Before we go, before we sign off, we must always ask Mr. Hanks what he thinks of today's show. So, Tom, how did it go?
I'd say that was a pretty successful broadcast.
I would agree with you, but I'm sure he's biased because he does tell me this every week. But Natalie, it's been an incredible pleasure to have you on the show. I'm sure people will be looking at the websites, looking at your social media, exploring more about Power Thoughts. We'll be back next week for another episode of The Happiness Algorithm. Be safe, be well, and be happy.
Daisies swaying, free in the breeze, the birds in the trees are singing along with me. I'm just looking for happy. Sunrise lights my smiley face clock, sliding in my socks, I pour my first cup of tea. I'm just looking for happy. If you open your heart, you will see there's a million little opportunities. For happy
comfy chair, pages where
wizards and knights have magical fights as the rain taps so tepidly. I'm just looking for happy. In the sand, your head on my shoulder, drinking the moment the sun falls into the sea. I'm just looking for happy. Yeah, I'm
looking for happy.
Phoenix FM.